Hello, blenders, and welcome to episode 83 of Real Blend, a podcast that somehow, for some inconspicuous reason, finds itself in Kevin McCarthy's hotel room, and not just when we're recording.
Hey-o!
Think about that for a second.
Yeah, why are we always in my room?
You invite us.
Well, no. All right, so a couple things. Every time we're out of the country and we're somehow, for some reason,
yes.
Sean, Jake, and I
right.
are only ever together where we're in a foreign country.
Yes. Toronto.
Or Chicago.
Yes, but mostly London. It's mostly London.
But most of the time we record in my room.
Yes.
Or that's it. In my room in London for Spider-Man Far From Home.
Well, to be fair.
My room for TIFF last year.
Your basement.
My basement.
Wait, no, Jake wasn't there.
No, thanks
you
for that
in my basement.
You weren't there. That's
that was
right.
Jeez,
that sounds very Sons of Lambsis.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That was the Russo Brothers episode.
Yes.
When Sean and came in to do the Russo
there's
Brothers.
There's an open invitation to Charlotte. You guys can come down to North Carolina anytime you want to. There's just no reason
for
you to ever come.
We like to think of ourselves as your children, and if we ever met your actual children, there'd be a weird jealousy there.
By the way, shout out to Sean's son, who I followed on Twitter months ago, who has not followed me back.
Yeah, me either.
Thank you, PJ. Thank you very much.
That's okay. He doesn't listen to the show either.
Yeah.
So
thank you, PJ.
He will not know what that's
appreciate
all about.
Appreciate the follow, my friend.
I'm joined now. I'm sorry.
Oh, please.
The show is
the introduction.
I'm joined now.
Yes.
By my illustrious friend, Kevin McCarthy. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Hi, Jake. Thank you for being in my room.
You
and thank you for the fun moment we had earlier before we started recording the
I'm
show.
I'm also joined by
you
the
say
very.
Where he's from. You got to say where he's from. See, you're not good at this.
Oh,
Kevin McCarthy of...
I've never won an Emmy for hosting anything in my entire life.
Two-time
Emmy.
Best hair.
That's
hair.
Right.
Winner.
I'm also... Oh, yeah, Kevin's from D.C. and all that jazz. I'm also joined by the very, very so handsome...
Oh, Lord.
Gabe.
Oh.
How's it going, folks?
Oh, wow.
Yes!
So what people don't know is...
Also, Sean's here.
When Gabe speaks on the show, we have to pay him every word he says.
Every word.
Royalties.
Yeah.
That's fair. Can I take over now? Am I allowed to go?
Yeah, if you want the show to go downhill.
This is episode number 83, and as you guys can tell, we are live together in Toronto. This is the second time we've been doing the show together from Toronto, and of course, it dates all the way back to the time that we kicked off the Real Blend experiment before we even knew that it was going to be a podcast, when the three of us got together and recorded a video after Alfonso Cuarón's Gravity.
And oddly enough, that was actually in Sean's room.
That was your room.
Yeah,
that
and
was
because
my room.
We and so
yes.
There was a hotel. So people like the behind the scenes stories. We are at TIFF and we've been coming here for over a decade, all of us.
Yeah.
And we were here for Gravity, and we've discussed this before. The video's on YouTube if you want to check it out. But we all were compelled to come back here and geek out about it.
Yeah.
And that's how the show started. And then years later, we actually came together to do the awards blend show.
Yes.
Which then became obviously Real Blend.
I tweeted this today because I got to realize my very first TIFF screening for any movie was for Walk the Line. James,
oh, wow.
James
what a good one.
Really?
What a good one.
I was up here in 2005.
What was your first TIFF screening?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I think mine was, what was the movie with Zach Galifianakis, it's...
I was going to say mine was a Keira Knightley period piece, but that does not narrow it down at all.
Like an institution?
Oh, it's kind of a funny story.
Yes.
That's it.
That was my first... That and then that movie with Sam Rockwell and Hilary Swank where he was falsely accused of...
Confession?
Yes.
Just Mercy?
Those are my first TIFF
movies. See, it is just like every other movie. Yeah,
every
you're
other
right,
movie.
It is just like every
other
movie.
I think mine might have been The Duchess.
Oh, yeah.
With
okay.
Ray Fiennes. I got Ray Fiennes for that and
okay.
Keira Knightley.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I was at the junket. I was at the junket with you. Yes, I remember that. And Ray Fiennes was great. I was so scared of him.
He's always been great. I think he's such a great interview.
Did you ask him about why his name is pronounced Ray if it's spelt Ralph?
I did not ask him
I
that.
I want to know the answer to that.
Wait, I want to tell my story. I know Gabe is rapping me, but the reason I came to Walk the Line. Well, hold on. I came up in 2005. I was invited for the junket for The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
And hey, I love their movies.
No, they're tremendous. Yeah. I love Wallace and Gromit. And I got, what's her face? Tim Burton, Helena Bonham Carter. She was voicing it, and someone else was, I forget who the other voice was. So I was there for that junket, and this was back in the day when, like, if Fox was up here just with whatever movies, I was able to go to their hospitality suite and say, well, what screenings do you have? And they were like, oh, we have Walk the Line, and it's starting right down the street. So I went down the street and then went down to this little basement theater, and there were two critics in it to watch Walk the Line, me and Roger Ebert.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you talk to him?
No, I didn't. I was terrified of him.
Wait. Okay, I want to know.
Yeah.
So when you walk into a theater, he's already sitting.
He's
right?
already in there, yes.
Okay. Do you sit near him, behind him? No, what do you where do you sit?
No. I sat behind him so I can watch him. So, I sat behind him so I can stare at him.
It's so funny because I've told this story before.
So creepy that I just said that.
I went to 2001 Space Odyssey in New York, and the showing before mine, Steven Spielberg apparently bought a ticket and went to see.
That's awesome.
And all I think about now is if I walked into a theater and saw Spielberg watching 2001 on 70 millimeter, where would I sit? Would I watch him watch the movie?
In his lap.
So were you able to watch Walk the Line and without thinking about what Roger He's never Ebert seen was it. Thinking?
No, I watched him the entire time.
Like, what was it like watching him?
I mean, that's normal. He's just a critic. He's just a critic doing it. But anyway, full
just
circle,
a
because I'm here for Ford v. Ferrari and James Mangold, and we're going to have him on the show. Can I say that? Yes. Theoretically, we're going to try to get James Mangold on the show.
Yeah. At some point
we're
in the existence of Real Blend,
best.
We'd like for him to be on the show.
We would like for him to be on
as
the
a,
show.
As a joke, yes. I am pretty superstitious, so I don't ever say we're getting somebody for sure. Like,
yeah.
I know that we have some potential big guests coming up. Mangold is on our list to get here at TIFF as we're sitting here right now. Things always could fall through.
Of course.
We also have possibly Roger Deakins.
Oh, you said Deakins? You said it?
I'm just saying possibly.
Oh my gosh,
I didn't
that
say
is,
we definitely had
that
it.
That is a huge step for Kevin McCarthy.
We possibly
just
have
say
Deakins.
That out loud. Oh wait, we didn't even say the fact that we'd actually have a recorded interview that's part of this week's episode.
Can we say we have that one?
Yes,
it's already done.
It's done. It's finished. We have Bill Skarsgård from It Chapter 2, the man who plays Pennywise, is going to be on this week's episode of Real Blend.
I'd argue one of the greatest horror monster performances
yes.
in movie history.
I agree.
Yeah.
Joining the ranks of a Robert Englund.
Ooh.
His performance
Hopkins?
In it-
Anthony Hopkins?
Well, that's a different game.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
No, well, no. Hopkins
like
is like
Jason yeah. Freddy. You're in that line.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so, sure.
Which is interesting because Sean submitted a question about Freddy and Jason and sequels and the idea that does the monster still remain scary in the sequels?
Good
and you're gonna hear that answer in the interview with
later
Bill
on the
Skarsgård,
show.
Who plays Pennywise, who, by the way, it was very rare that we got him.
Yeah.
He does not do a lot of interviews.
And we will set that up as a little bit later in the show. Reviews, obviously. We have been inundated with
read the one where they compare us to Jesus.
Outstanding reviews lately from people. And I will, I'm going to pick Jake's right. I should absolutely read this one because it is fair and balanced. And it comes from Kev's mom. And she, for her subject line, says, "This podcast is Jesus reincarnated." Now,
seems fair.
I think that that's, it's really nice. I mean, that's nice, but I love this show. Obviously, we pour our heart and soul into it. And I don't think that that's accurate. But I will read what they have to say. Kev's mom says, "First of all, I love the podcast. I recently got a position as a business affairs broker at J.J. Abrams's Bad Robot." Now that's
Bad Robot.
Pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Someone who works at Bad Robot is listening to the show. And I thought
we're like 1 degree removed from J.J. Abrams listening to our show.
Do you think J.J.'s listened? Like maybe this guy went into work and said,
Tarantino listened. Crazier things could happen.
I bet you J.J.'s listened. I think he has. And
JJ,
maybe we'll have him on.
JJ, adopt me.
Come on the show.
Oh, you went in a much more practical direction than I did.
Adopt me. And I thought it would be a great... Okay, wait. Hold on. Got a job at JJ
Words
Robots at Bad Robot, and I thought it would be a great idea to look up some old interviews for his Star Trek films and Super 8, and that's how I came across Kevin McCarthy and Jake Hamilton. I then followed both of them on Instagram and through social media, found out about the Real Blend podcast, which has now become some of my favorite pastimes during my commute from Studio City to Bad Robot in Santa Monica, which is about a 1 hour drive in the mornings. Too much information. I don't need to know all that. I just talk about the show. Like, right? Like, that's too much information.
Oh my God. You've changed.
Let's talk more about us. I want to say thanks to Sean.
He sounds like a local television
Kevin
news personality.
And Jake for making my commute entertaining and informative on what the journalistic perspective of the film industry is. Anyways, I got to get to work. So Dunkirk, three exclamation points, all capitals. That is from Kev's mom, who thinks we are Jesus reincarnated. I do think that's pretty awesome that we're one step away from J.J.
Abrams.
That's pretty cool. And I'm going to bet that he's listened.
Can we be stormtroopers? That's what I want.
That's a pretty fair ask. I like that.
Why can't we just pop on the mask and be in a sequence?
It's not a
like
bad
Kevin
idea.
Kevin Smith did it, and so did Daniel Craig.
Yeah, absolutely.
I always find it amazing that Daniel Craig played a stormtrooper in Force
it's
Awakens.
A little bit strange. That's a really
it blows
odd
my mind.
Person. All right, but let's talk more about why we're here in
Toronto
for the film festival. Jake, tell me what you are most looking forward to seeing. You are not here for as long as we are.
I'm not, because
you're having an easy TIFF schedule.
I actually have to work.
A laid-back TIFF schedule.
Yeah, pretty low-key TIFF schedule. I'm popping in, popping out because I got to get back to Chicago because I've got a furry four-legged child that loves me.
Aw, Daenerys.
Yeah. Great excuse to get out of things that you don't want to. Oh, God, that drove me nuts.
All right.
Anyway, I'm very excited to, I'm going to be seeing Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. If you guys aren't aware, if you've never met me before or never listened to the show, I am a fan of America's
Fred
Dad.
Fred Rogers.
Yeah, yeah. America's
Huge
two dads.
Fred Rogers.
Fred Rogers and Tom Hanks. And to see one play the other, I think it's going to be amazing. I'm also a massive, actually, I don't know if you guys know this, I'm a big fan of the TV show The Americans.
Okay.
And I love Matthew Reese.
Oh, interesting.
Love Matthew Reese.
Oh, is
love
he the journalist?
Americans. He's the journalist.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I think it's a really interesting story because it's about a reporter who essentially doesn't want to do what we get paid to do, which is cover features.
Yeah.
He's like a hard news, grizzled reporter.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be great. I think the hype behind the casting is some of the most hype we've seen for casting in a long time.
Okay.
Tom Hanks has Fred Rogers.
As soon as you saw the picture,
yeah.
The official photo released of him. Yeah, like you said, even when you heard the casting that he was going to be playing Mr. Rogers, that was incredible. All right.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
Gabe and I are doing the carpet for that movie. What are the odds that we will get Tom Hanks to stop?
I think he'll do it.
You think?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
He usually stops on carpets.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think you'll get him.
Even
on
if
the
they
carpet.
Bunch us up? Even if they bunch us up, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
That would be fine.
Yeah,
people
still
who don't know, like these carpets sometimes, especially like a festival like this, they will like they get down the lines sometimes.
Oh, you all have to put your mics together.
And then one person, like they'll put five outlets together with, and then the actor will answer one question. And then whoever decides to ask that question, I guess, is the outlet who asks it.
Right.
And then that's such a frustrating
thing.
Well,
we did Just Mercy today.
Yeah.
And Michael B. Jordan did stop. He's the star of the movie. And he did kind of stop to make sure he got to just about everybody in huge groups. So you're right. Tom Hanks may stop. Yeah. But at the same time, he's Tom Hanks.
The crazy thing about being at TIFF is you could see anybody at any given moment.
Right.
In the hotel we're recording at right now, Roger Deakins has apparently a ceremony happening.
What?
On Monday here. He's being honored in this exact hotel we're sitting in right
now. Why aren't we there? Oh, Monday.
It's on Monday.
It's on Monday.
But I mean, like, my wife saw Ron Howard in the lobby yesterday.
Okay.
The director of Solo?
Oh, yeah. I forgot he directed
that. You guys don't get to talk to him.
Did he really direct that?
I forgot he directed Solo.
Dare you, sir?
How dare you?
Dare you?
I would love to walk up to him and say, sir, what is your name?
Who are your people?
Who are your people?
Kevin, what are you excited to see while you're here?
The cool thing about TIFF is that it's such an indicator of the Oscars. There's so many big films that have played here. Slumdog Millionaire, obviously. 12 Years a Slave. Like these massive films went on to win tons of major awards showed here. They were shown here.
Last year, we covered a little film called A Star Is Born.
Yeah,
Star Wars
was here. We all went to a reception with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. We interviewed Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga, which was crazy.
I hugged Gaga.
I'm sorry?
I hugged Gaga.
I know. I remember that.
I hugged her. Bradley.
Did you really?
I hugged Sam Elliott.
Someone counted all of our name drops in last year's Toronto episode.
They better readjust that count.
It was 2 hours. We're not going to quite do 2 hours this time through, but what are you most looking forward to?
Well, Jake and I are here for Three Junkets specifically. We'll get to Judy shortly.
Okay.
I know I'm actually trying to see as many movies as I can while I'm here this year. Generally, I come here for Junkets, which I am here for. I'm doing Goldfinch. Jake and I saw Goldfinch today together. We saw The Report tonight. So we're recording
Adam Driver's film.
We saw The Report, which was the new Adam Driver film with Annette Bening and John Hamm. I'm most excited about Joker.
Okay.
Especially after the reaction out of Venice. Just the idea of the R rating and the gritty element of it, the Scorsese themes that people were picking up on from King of Comedy and Taxi Driver. Just sounds awesome.
Which apparently I'm learning Scorsese did not produce Joker.
No.
I thought he was a producer on it.
I thought he was also. I know his name is no longer on it.
Someone corrected us on social media.
But Bradley Cooper's a producer.
On Joker?
Because Todd Phillips is his boy. Like, they're boys. So I'm sure he's helping him out.
I'm not crazy, right? Like, Scorsese was supposed to be a producer.
I was producing it.
I absolutely heard that early on.
I know Scorsese is like involved with the Safdie brothers.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. He was like, he was thanked. I think he's a big part of the reason why they got Good Time made. Don't quote me on that, but if you look in the credits for Good Time, which was, by the way, PSA to any listener out there right now, if you haven't seen Good Time, change that right away.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll see Scorsese's name in the credits. But they have a movie here called The Uncut Gems.
Yeah, with Adam
Sandler. Which we've all heard is incredible.
Yeah.
Knives Out is here, Ryan Johnson's movie.
Jojo Rabbit.
Jojo Rabbit, the new Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
We were discussing Taika Waititi earlier.
Love his sense of humor. You guys watch the TV show What We Do in the Shadows?
I started watching it.
I love it.
It's really quirky.
I love
it. It's super. That humor is touch and go for me.
Is that movie premiering here for the first time?
Yeah.
No one's seen it, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
The movie I saw last night, which was The Personal History of David Copperfield.
It's not about a magician.
I've never even heard of that movie. and that premiered here last night. But yeah, they're like Knives Out's here. This is...
Knives Out is a world premiere.
It's a big deal.
Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is a world premiere.
Tom Hanks will be out of November. Premiere.
That's a huge premiere. Yeah.
I was curious why, because Hustlers is here as well. There's a lot of like major films here. Halloween was
here. You tweeted something really interesting last night.
Oh, tell me.
Which was, just because a movie's here doesn't mean it's great.
Well, that's fair. Tell me how many TIFF movies you've seen up here.
We haven't seen Hustlers yet. Could be
amazing.
That
are not good. There's a bunch that come here. And TIFF has a huge slate they
have
to fill.
Halloween played here last year.
Sure. No, they have great movies.
Predator played here.
Predator was not good.
No, Predator was bad.
Right. And Predator kicked off the midnight session.
Right. But Sean...
there's this implication that if a movie's at TIFF, that it's... going to be competing for the Oscars.
I thought that was a fascinating point because a festival does kind of automatically put that mindset of, oh, it must be great.
Yeah.
Which can be detrimental because sometimes you'll see a movie that's good here, but if it's not Oscar good, then it's considered a disappointment.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I mean, like the best movie I've seen here so far, and personally, was The Report. And we all just saw it tonight.
Which I think at best could get a screenplay nomination.
I think Driver hopefully will get nominated. That guy is so talented.
I think he's going to get in for Marriage Story. Yes. Let me talk about...
is Noah Baumbach's movie, which I'm seeing Monday.
I am too.
Do we see it Monday together?
I'm going in the morning.
Like, people like listening right now, the TIFF schedule is insane.
It really is.
It is.
It's crazy that we've mentioned all of these films
insane.
That are all here for the next couple of days.
And we're all doing this in the next 3 days.
Yeah.
Like,
so
every
it's like
one
you're
of these
all
movies.
Opening. See, I'm leaving on Sunday.
Yeah.
So you guys go ahead and open all your Christmas presents on Thanksgiving.
Well, wait a second.
And I get to parcel them out.
You're not one of those people that like does like one gift an hour on Christmas, right?
No, but you guys are opening them up in September.
It's not like we're seeing Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah. I'd see that.
Yeah,
like,
it's not like we're seeing that here. We're not seeing Jay and Silent Bob
Reboot. Let me be mad that you guys are seeing everything without me.
Is Reboot one of your most anticipated films
for the rest
of this year?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Can I say that you saw it?
That's fine. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You did. Kevin said that you were into the thing.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Marriage Story. I'm looking forward to Joker, obviously. I saw Ford v Ferrari. And I can talk about that. And I'm sitting down with James Mangold. And if the audio passes Gabe's muster, then we will potentially bring this interview with James Mangold to the show. But I can tell you guys, it is absolutely an Oscar player. It is a tremendous film. Bale.
Above the line?
We'll get in.
Actor?
Bale's in.
For actor?
Yes.
Can I say something? We were watching.
Damon might be in.
We were watching The Report tonight, and they cut to some footage of Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
And I couldn't unsee Bale.
Same.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
I thought the same thing.
Look at his
There's
teeth.
Even a moment they went to Rumsfeld quickly, and I was like, Stevie? Steve Carell?
Honestly,
that's so true.
I saw Bale in Cheney.
Yeah, I know.
Which is like the complete opposite of what it should be.
Well, and then if you see him in Ford v Ferrari, you're again bowled over by his range. Like, it's the furthest thing from Dick Cheney I've ever seen in my life.
Who has more range than Bale? Range.
Daniel Day-Lewis?
No, range.
Daniel Day-Lewis?
Yeah, Daniel Day-Lewis.
Like, There Will Be Blood.
What do you mean?
I love Daniel Day-Lewis, but I don't think Daniel Day-Lewis has enough movies to have that range.
I mean, you can put Bale the Butcher up against his Phantom Thread character,
exactly.
And they're wildly different.
No, I think Bill the Butcher, you could.
Versus My Left Foot?
Bill the Butcher
Lincoln?
Has similar qualities
Lincoln.
To There'll Be Blood.
Late Abraham Lincoln.
Now.
I don't like that movie,
by
the way.
I don't like Lincoln either.
Yeah, it's such a boring movie.
It was
movie.
Like a documentary.
I can't stand this. He's fine,
sure.
But I don't remember the rest of the movie
at
all.
It didn't win Best Picture, it won Best Actor.
Thank goodness it didn't win Best
Picture.
One thing
I do want to mention is Judy.
Yeah.
So,
talk about that.
Jake and I saw Judy, and Jake and I have been discussing this all day. I want Jake to go into more detail about this because the Wizard of Oz set stuff was interesting. This is a movie that goes back and forth between the last year of Judy Garland's life and the Wizard of Oz set.
Okay.
And Jake, you were talking about, it's truly depressing.
Yeah, I don't know this story.
If you're not familiar with the story,
horrifying.
Not to like ruin it for you, but she died at the age of 47.
She was that young?
She was 47.
47.
Oh my
and,
God.
I mean, more than the back half of her life was nothing short of tragic. And the argument could be made that tragedy began on the set of Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
So a majority of the movie, 85% of it, takes place in the final months of her life.
Oh, no kidding.
And
but it's very Very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it flashes back to a young actress playing Judy Garland on the set of Wizard of Oz. And it shows certain things happening to her on that set that you sort of feel like probably set the tone for the rest of her life, being pills being shoved down her face.
So she couldn't sleep or not gain weight.
Yeah, she wasn't allowed to eat. Like, just because, you know.
They threw her a birthday party with a cake that she was not allowed to have.
Oh, really?
That's
okay.
And it was like this. They just designed her life. And it, to me, it talked a lot about Hollywood perception.
I was
going to
say that's
reality.
What show business does, right?
Well, the downside is that I feel like it's for me at least, and by no means I'm not trying to be dramatic or like say it, like it ruined Wizard of Oz, but I will forever look at Wizard of Oz differently.
Yeah.
Because you can't help but wonder what was happening to that poor girl.
Sure, right.
Right off.
You also want to know the backstories of most of the films.
Or a movie
you love.
Like that, because Wizard of Oz is such a an innocent, sweet, pure film, and you think it's starring, and it is
well,
starring
you
this
say
innocent.
That, but weren't there always like stories about the Munchkins? Like,
no, it's a
crazy
peacock's
drinking
tail
parties.
Going up and down. The watch the you're talking about with the Munchkin that hung himself in the
not
background.
Not even the guy who hung himself, just like wild drinking
true?
And drunk
no, it's
parties.
It's a peacock tail going up and down.
Oh, is that what it
about
is?
Yeah. The one like, I remember there was like
that's
a bunch of these little trivias. Wasn't there one where like it said "Sex in the Clouds"? Like it was like
was the Surrender like Mermaid or Lion King or something.
Lion King had like it was in the
maybe.
Cloud. Or was it Aladdin?
It's pretty funny.
There was like these rare.
I'd love
random...
for an animator to fit that in. Oh,
anyway,
there's a
so
penis
changes,
in Little
yeah.
Mermaid. There's a penis yeah. in Little Mermaid. In the,
are those
as
real?
Well, the
those
castles
like,
are phallic to say the least.
The cat is that what it is?
But anyway, the things that you know there are certain aspects of what went on behind the scenes in Wizard of Oz that really gonna that had an impact on who she became.
Right.
And you can't help but feel like ultimately had a cause on her death.
So
which
my
was
mindset going
overdose.
Into Judy was Judy Garland is Dorothy from Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
That was my version of Judy Garland, right? So like the Judy Garland that I always knew and loved was I don't know, just reminded me of who Dorothy kind of was. I thought, but I mean, again, I'm not a massive Judy Garland fan where I've like watched every one of her movies. And
sure.
So I didn't know a ton about her. Obviously I know her big major Hollywood points, Star is Born, things like that. But
yeah.
But there is something to be said in this film that I found fascinating about the idea of how our lives, how we perceive people in that business.
Yeah.
She was a very, very lonely, very sad person.
Right.
Because she, and it was, whatever was implemented to her on that set on Wizard of Oz affected her greatly.
Right.
And all honestly, she was a great mother who wanted to be a great mother. But wasn't able to be a great mother because of money problems.
Yeah.
And once you learn kind of why she went down that path, that separation from her kids, it's really sad to watch.
I'm
it really
sure it is.
But it's a phenomenal performance. And I do think Judy Garland was a great person, just given a darker path than she deserved.
I'm sure it's something we'll be talking about through the course of the awards season, in addition to a lot of these films that we're seeing up here, things like Joker, things like Ford v. Ferrari. Let's get to This Week in Movies, which will include something that we managed to see up here, The Goldfinch, adaptation of what I've learned after the fact is a Pulitzer Prize-winning novel.
I didn't know that until Jake said that.
Which I'm stunned about, because I'll go first. I didn't care for this movie not one little bit, and you guys liked it more than I did, and I'll let you guys defend it in a second. It is a story of a boy named Theo. The character is portrayed by two different actors. Oakes Fegley plays the younger version of the character. This is the boy who is in
Pete's Dragon.
He played Pete in Pete's Dragon. And then Ansel Elgort plays the older version of him. And he was involved in a terrorist bombing of an art gallery as a young at a young age, and he loses his mother in the course of the bombing.
Right,
but he saves a picture, a goldfinch painting of the bird, the goldfinch, essentially. And it's the ridiculous journey of this character and the portrait. And
it's unfortunately the most depressing artistic version of Forrest Gump you've ever seen.
You always say about like, what's the elevator pitch? Like the elevator pitch on this movie is ludicrous. If you try to sum up the plot, it like I just told you guys what it is, and it's weird.
It's Forrest Gump like, where like he goes on this journey, and there are these these wild characters.
Oh, it introduces
back.
A new character every 10 minutes.
Yeah. Forrest Gump's actually a really interesting.
Yeah, it's the most depressing Forrest Gump you've ever seen.
Yes.
I will say that as I'm watching this, I kept thinking, God, I bet the book is amazing.
I'm sure it is.
Because it really, one, it's I'd argue it's way too long. It was
right.
Like 2.5 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And it felt like rather than try to maybe just trim some stuff from the book.
Right.
They just went, let's just try to just squeeze it in as much
as much
possible.
As you can.
Let's just
I'm
try
sure.
to get as much. Let's just, you know.
And I think the performances are really good. I think everybody in it's good. I just felt like it felt like a really hard book to adapt.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't.
It was a great miniseries.
I think so.
Yeah, it would have been a good 10 episode series because there's so many layers to it. And this kid who loses his mother in that bombing goes through so many different things, like where he's like moved into a home with Nicole Kidman's character. Then he moves to Vegas at one point. I mean, it was almost like they rushed through these gigantic aspects of this kid's life.
Sure.
So much so that it was just hard for you to emotionally attach to it. But that being said, I liked the film. I was pleasantly surprised just kind of how engaged I was with following his arc and kind of what he was doing.
Yeah.
I mean, but think about it. So going back to the miniseries thing, imagine, so there are a lot of aspects of characters popping up in the movie and then disappearing and then coming back later.
Yeah.
Imagine meeting a character, let's say it's 10 episodes. Imagine meeting a character in episode 4 and then having that character come back in episode 9. How much more impactful that would
absolutely,
be.
Absolutely. Because there are.
Remember that character from 20 minutes ago? Here they are old.
Yeah, there are important characters. One played by Finn Wolfhard as the young kid who show back up later. And it's supposed to be relevant. And instead, to me, just felt so coincidental because they had to pack it all into that 2.5 hour movie.
You know what I found fascinating tonight when we were watching the report, talking about time jumping? The report did this, and I know we got to wrap, but the report did this really cool thing where they had a visual on screen as to what year you were being placed into.
Oh, yeah, that
the
was
actual
cool.
timeline.
And but literally a timeline. So you started in 2001, and then you ended in whatever, the 2016, I think it was. But cool part about it was they didn't have to tell you that every time. You started to figure it out.
So they
would at one point jump to like 2007 and you would know you're in 2007 without them telling you again.
Sure, right.
And I think that's just really good screenwriting because, yes, you tell the audience where you are, you set them up, and then you allow them to go on the journey with you.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes films don't have the ability to keep you engaged where you kind of know where you are timeline-wise. And you said you were confused in Goldfinch.
Well, it's too much jumping around.
That happened to me with Beautiful Boy.
Yeah.
Beautiful Boy, I found, jumped way too much. I didn't know where they were.
Yeah.
That bothered me.
That happened a lot. Hello, sweetheart. How are you? The other movie that's opening is Hustlers. None of us have seen it. Is that correct?
No. And I really would like to see Hustlers.
Yeah.
I've been trying to see it.
It's up here.
Here's why I'm interested in seeing it. I really, really think J-Lo does a great job as... I think she's a good actress, one. I also think she's like... Have you ever seen Out of Sight?
Yes.
I like Made in Manhattan. I think J-Lo's a good actor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay, so we are super excited about an interview, though, that we're going to have on this week's show, because by now, hopefully, most of you guys have gone out to the theater to go see It Chapter 2, the conclusion of the saga. The adult versions of The Losers Club. We have talked about the fact that I think we all basically agree it's not quite as good as the first movie, but we still think it is really good, and we're hoping for a longer potential 6-hour cut, the King cut that might put all of it together. Go find both of these guys' interviews. They interview the cast on their YouTube page, and Jake got a really great insight about what Andy Muschietti would add to that 6-hour cut. But one thing that you didn't hear on the junket circuit from virtually anybody was Bill Skarsgård giving interviews, because they went out of their way to protect him from doing TV interviews. They wanted to preserve the mystery of what he looks like as a character. But the fact that we had an audio podcast means that we were fair game for Bill Skarsgård to come on and talk to us. That is exactly what Kevin McCarthy was able to do at the It Chapter 2 junket, and you guys can listen to it right now.
Thank you for taking the time to do this, man.
Of course, man.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And by the way, your dad's performance in Chernobyl was that show was incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Like,
isn't it?
Blew my mind with that.
Yeah,
what Craig Mazin did with that. I mean, oh my God! Like your dad and Jared Harris, that whole was unreal.
So. Yeah, and Johan Rank, the director, is so good. It's so cinematic. I was like, everybody's like, that's really good. I'm like, I was on. You know, you're on your HBO thing, and you're like, I'm like, God, I'm gonna fucking, when are you in the mood for great Soviet, you know, Chernobyl?
Yeah.
But then I watched it and I'm like, it's so cinematic. It's like, amazing. It's actually a really enjoyable, pleasurable watch, as well as a, you know, heavy, dark theme. But
yeah, I agree. Yeah. It felt like an entertaining thing. Well, first of all, thank you so much for being here. We are in an old house here in LA. This is amazing. I'm here with Bill Skarsgård. We're talking about It Chapter 2. I'm curious. I know you've talked a lot about the design of the character, I mean, in certain interviews, but I'm curious how certain choices were made. How did you, where did the voice come from? How did you find his voice?
The voice was, you know, it was sort of a developing thing. Like, even when we started shooting it, it wasn't, you know, entirely set. I didn't have it entirely set. I mean, part of what I wanted was this voice to be, you know, like I was like, or conceptually when I was thinking about it, it's like it could be whatever, and it could also, it doesn't have to be consistent. Like the character can be different types and have different voices. I was all, you know, he's a shape-shifting monster, so I was very like, at the beginning it was very, you know, the potential of what this voice would sound like would was pretty much infinite. And then we kind of ended up, you know, the laugh came before the voice, and this like, really? Kind of, yeah. So when I had the kind of the laugh and the this kind of panicky, you know, angst driven hysterical laugh, and then the voice became this kind of crackling, you know, a thing that kind of was built on off of the laugh. Yeah,
this is a super random question. I'm curious how they do the drool. Like, in the sense
that's just
like
me drooling.
I know it's you but what I mean by that is like they cut to you at a certain point, so you have to have it like fall at a certain point in the scene. Like, is it like,
no, it's never planned.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it's never planned.
No, and
part of like the performance is not for me. Performing it was never like, I never had any kind of cues to hit or anything. It was basically like, all right, I have the character, and then when the scene starts, anything is allowed and anything can happen and will happen, and hopefully the camera will just pick it up on it. So all the drool, it's just happen chance when
that's
it happens.
Wild. Now obviously the term villain I think is fascinating to me. I mean, yeah. this particular character is very fascinating, very layered. I'm curious, as an actor, how do you justify his actions? Like, do you, like, because he doesn't think he's a villain. He doesn't think.
Yeah.
So how do you then make yourself, okay, I understand why he's doing this. How do you find that?
Well, I mean, I think that a pretty good way to start about it is going to something very primal and very animalistic, that it's, you know, he needs this to survive. He needs to feed to survive. You know, he is, as we all are, limited by our own design. You know, he is what he is, and it just happens to be, from the perspective of the kids and humanity, a very awful thing that he is. But to himself, he's, this is what he is, and it's normal, and it's a part of a survival mechanism. Mm. Now, that being said, I mean, we're also talking about kind of the embodiment of evil in a way, and I was just, you know, building the character, and the performance is just like, okay, what is evil? And to me, it's truly taking pleasure in hurting. Mm. and suffering and fear. So that was kind of, you know, we can all relate to it in some way, I think. Yeah. You know, there's always, I think everyone has had at one point or another where you might have enjoyed, you know, a remark or, you know, whatever it is. And it's a disgusting part of oneself. Mm. And in Pennywise, it's that unleashed. So, you know, if it's picking, it's bullying, it's enjoying all of hurting. And, and yeah, and that is the performance, the mocking, and he thrives in hate.
the thing that creeped me out the most was seeing Pennywise almost in like minimal makeup. I mean, it's in the trailer.
Yeah.
That's a great sequence. It kind of reminded me in The Dark Knight when they cut to Ledger for a second without his Joker makeup on.
Right. Yeah.
I was just curious if that, like, did you, like, doing a minimal makeup, does the amount of makeup help you get into him more? If you're minimally made up, is it harder to become him?
No, not at all. And did you see the film?
Yeah, saw it last
night. Yeah. Oh, cool. So, that performance, it was a part. It's partially Pennywise and partially something else, yeah, which was fun to explore. And that in of itself, the face, the makeup was, you know, obviously there weren't any paint on, but there was still this bulbous head piece and the bald head and everything. And the eyebrows were accentuated. And I was just I loved the face of that guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and actually the only, we didn't have any makeup test for it. So literally the first time I put that on was the day when we shot it. So, you know, and same way as kind of I treated the makeup with the clown makeup the first time was the first time I had it on, okay, this is what the character looks like. And now I need to get used to that. So I would just, you know, literally perform in front of the mirror and film myself for the first, you know, tests that we did with the clown makeup on. So like, how does my face translate with this makeup on? And now with the you know, non-makeup face, it was a new guy, and I played around with a few things, and then when we shot it, we just really let loose and explored what that, you know, let that kind of person, or you know, this kind of more simplified version of Pennywise, or maybe a more a primal version of him. Yeah, it was really fun.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
Have you ever FaceTimed a friend or a family member in the Pennywise makeup?
Oh, so many times.
Tell me, can you give me like an example?
I FaceTimed in the non-pen, like the bald face man as well. Yeah, yeah.
What? Who do you call when that happens? Like, who have you called in the full Pennywise getup?
Well,
like,
of course, my girlfriend, my partner. I mean, she's got so desensitized by it that it was just like literally like, hey, how's work? And it's just like, you know, well, you know, I'm just a bit tired today with Pennywise. And yeah, I think literally like almost, yeah, I think all of my family members, I mean, cause it got to the point, I mean, I've been in that clown phase so much and it worked so much that, you know, you end up pretty much calling everyone, you know.
I would love to be on the receiving end of one of those calls.
Yeah.
One of our co-hosts, this is a podcast called Real Blend, and Sean said this great question. He's one of our co-hosts, and he said, you know, when you watch a lot of horror films over the years, Freddy or Jason or different classic horror villain characters, the more the movies go on, it's almost like you almost get rid of the shock value because you know that villain throughout.
Mm-hmm.
When you step into a sequel, to me, this one is more brutal and more horrifying than the first one in a very good way, in the sense of it works as a surprise. But is that a challenge to step into a sequel and go, all right, the element of surprise is kind of gone now. People know who Pennywise is.
Yeah.
Is there do you have to almost add to it to make it scarier?
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing and that has been, you know, maybe not a struggle, but it's been a thing that we've been mindful about, that, you know, you can't have too much of this monster villain on screen because you lose that kind of, you know, mysterious and you know, lethal aspect of it. It's the sort of Jaws phenomenon that you never see the shark,
yeah,
and that therefore it's the more scarier, obviously. We played around with that, but to me, you know, I think that there's more to Pennywise as a character than just being the shark. Like, there's something, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be like every time he's on, or for me at least, you know, because I don't find him scary at all anymore, you know. But,
you.
But
yeah.
Yeah, and neither does my family members, since all the FaceTime calls. But there's something interesting about the character, and you know, maybe you're not terrified every time you see him, the more you get exposed to him, but there's, you know, I wanted or I hope that the audience, you know, can watch him and kind of be puzzled and like, what's going on here? And there's something unexplainable about what it is, and this kind of force of nature and this maniacal evil thing that is entertaining you know, in another way, where it's not only just a jump scare mechanism. So, and in terms of, you know, being more lethal or being more volatile, I mean, it's just what he did in the first one, but more amplified. And you know, of course, with the whole spectacle of the ending, you know, so yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah. Now, I mean, the ending is amazing. And this is actually going to run after release, so I might ask some things that might be spoilery, but if you feel uncomfortable talking about them, you don't have to. But I'm curious about, what was the first scene you ever shot as Pennywise and the last scene you ever shot as Pennywise?
The first scene I ever shot was this shot that actually did not end up being in the movie, I think. There's It was literally a one shot for in front of a green screen as the first day of shooting. And it was for the first one, obviously. And I was, so there's, you know, the projector scene in the first movie.
Yes.
So there was a version before that where part of it was like the hair started going and the machine started going and then the face started moving. And then I started the character, or Pennywise started writing like something, and I started writing in front of the screen where the kids are freaking out.
Huh.
You die if you try, I think. And then they kick it, it shatters, and it, you know, continue with the scene as it plays in the movie. But so it was literally a shot of me writing backwards because it was in front of this a glass piece, which was great because like it's not really a scene; it's just a moment. And you know, at that point, I was still figuring out the character and all of that. And the last thing that I ever shot, like I want to say it was the death.
Is it?
No, it's actually not true.
Do you still shoot the death, just even if the head's there like that? Do you still shoot that moment?
Yeah, it's all me.
Cool.
It's all me.
Because he's smaller, obviously, in that moment.
Well, it's a funny thing. So it's the face is there, and my body is literally in the set building.
That's
so
cool.
So I'm, you know, the mountainous thing, or this kind of, you know, cavern. My body is behind it, and my face is literally sticking out. And then they have this pancake mold around it, and then it's me. And then, you know, we had like a puppet body that was there for reference, but obviously it ended up being, you know, that's a CGI effect. But yeah, so that was very weird. So it's all me acting, but just literally with my face. And then no, but we did an additional shoot. A scene that was later added, which is the scene with the little Ben when he's coming out of the Pennywise is coming out of the locker, and that we shot you know a couple of months back. So that was an additional scene that we added
scene.
To it, and I think that was the last thing that I did as Pennywise.
So my other co-host Jake, he did this press junket yesterday, and he was talking to Andy. It's interesting because you didn't do a ton of press for the first movie, and I think that was interesting by design because it was more of like we don't want, because Pennywise is a scary character.
Yeah.
If you associate him with you because you look nothing like him, would it take away? Is that something that was that something that you wanted to come up with? Jake was asking, was that something you designed? Or like,
no, for the first one, it was, you know, it was Warner Brothers and the marketing department talked about it and the producers talked about it and they talked to me about it. And with the first movie, you know, this is kind of the thing that launched me. I mean, it definitely was in a lot of ways. So there was a thing of like, you know, if the public don't associate the actor with the character, that might be a good thing. That was the reason for it on the first one. And on the second one, I'm still not doing as much as some of the other actors, but we're doing it more. And for me, I mean, I kind of enjoy talking about it, you know, like this is the last time that you'll see the character and we're kind of celebrating the launch of it and saying goodbye to the whole, you know, project and role and everything. I'm kind of enjoying being able to talk about it with the separation of not, you know, pretending that I'm actually a murderous clown.
Now, this is a question I'm sure actors get a lot about, like, do characters stay with you? But, I mean, this is a very layered character. There's a lot going on in that character's mind. Does it ever come back? Well, not, like, the murderous aspect of it, but just, like, the voice. Do you ever, like, accidentally, like, think something he would think? Or like the voice, like, because you kind of become him in the movie.
Yeah.
Does the voice ever come back by mistake maybe sometimes? Or
I don't know. Like not when I'm myself, he never comes out. But I was working on a thing where I kind of changed my voice for another thing that I was doing. And I was like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. And like the voice kind of almost like, there was a little resemblance of putting this character who had nothing to do with the murderous clown. So I was like, oh, that's weird. But the voice is so different than mine that even the laugh is too, I mean, everything about him is, you know, hopefully a few steps away from from me as a person.
Now, this is something I was out there in the first movie. I didn't know this until Andy just told me this today. I didn't know. I thought they were CGing your eye going that way.
Oh, yeah. That's...
So, yeah. Okay, for people listening right now, he just did that. Is that something you've just been doing since you were... Okay, yeah, it's freaking me out. Have you been doing that since you were a kid? Did you... Like, how do you move one eye? I can't do that.
It's a lazy eye, you know? So, there's a... You know, like when I get tired, it kind of, you know, it goes a little bit. And then I figured out, I mean, I can't remember what age that was, but I was like, oh, I can, you know, maybe I was like 10 or something. I can actually do this whenever I want to. And then it kind of became a little bit of a party trick. And then, and I always wanted, like, it's funny because like in the lip thing as well, which is like a, wow. You know, yeah.
That's like freaking me out just to see that in person, by the way.
So. Yeah. And it's, that was something that, you know, my older brother had a kind of a goofy character that he did when we were kids that had that lip. And
really?
And then, yeah. And then I figured out that I could also do it. And it's this thing where like most people don't know how to do it. But like for some reason, like most of my family knows how to do it. My sister can do it and my little brother can do it. It's just like a weird little thing. Of
is there a family photo of you guys all doing that together?
There's photos of me and my sister for sure.
Someone please release that.
Yeah. So it's a little Pennywise family. No, but so I have, you know, these things, and I was like, okay, you know, even, you know, going into this character, I'm like, ooh, like I always wanted to use them for something, and then I was like, for this one, I could literally use, you know, the lazy eye, the lip, like everything, and just kind of make that as transformative and weird and scary and strange as you can get. So it was kind of the perfect role for me to just use all of these little skills that I you know, I've always had.
You know, as I wrap me up, I think you're a great actor. I love doing Atomic Blonde. I think you do great work.
No, thank you very much.
I think this character, clearly there's a lot of acting going on there. I'm just blown away. Like, Tim, when I meet you in person, just obviously a very completely different individual in a good way, obviously. But I'd be curious, because I was reading when the first one came out, you didn't want to reproduce Tim Curry's It. It was Pennywise. It was a different Pennywise.
Yeah.
What if those two met? What do you think those two Pennywises... I mean, in a hypothetical nerdy situation.
Right, right.
But they're very different. You make yours your own, but could you imagine those two Pennywises, like, somehow...
Hanging out?
Yeah. Like, what would they do?
Yeah. That's a scary thought, isn't it? what would they talk about, right? There's, you know, what we played into with our version of the character was obviously something... You know, more gross, more disgusting, more primal. This kind of monstrous, you know, thing. And Tim Curry did this kind of, you know, wonderful sort of vaudevillian kind of type of old school clown performance.
Yeah.
Which might be in a lot of ways truer to the book, you know, or maybe the idea of the clown is more of that. But you know, we were doing the new movie, and we had to like, all right, what are we? We can't obviously reproduce what is already done, and nobody can do the Tim Curry performance as good as he did. So we just had to go something else, you know, so some different direction with it, and became this, you know, maniacal freak of a, you know, being.
Yeah. I was waiting for Stephen King to turn into you at some point in the movie. I was like, I bet you Bill wanted to be in that scene. I bet you he did.
Yeah. I just still haven't met the man.
Oh, you haven't met Stephen King?
No. So it's so strange.
Someone get this done. I mean, you're in it.
I know. And he was on set, you know, obviously, but I wasn't working that day.
That's
so
amazing. I've never met him either, but that's cool. It was awesome talking to you, man.
Yeah, you too, man. Appreciate it. It was awesome. Yeah.
We really have to thank Bill Skarsgård for coming onto the show. It's incredible that Warner, but thank you so much to Warner Brothers.
Thank you.
For giving us time with him. Again, he was such an anticipated interview for most people. You guys were even saying at the junket, like he was there and kind of like wandering around, but not really partaking. And then for him to sit down and do that with us to give us 30 minutes was unbelievable. This week's blend game, man alive. This one is, this one was a challenge. So we've been playing the decades game. I'm going to give Jake all the credit in the world for coming up with this. We did hashtag 60s blend. As a reminder, I did Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Jake did
2001.
And Kevin did
Psycho.
Exactly. So we're picking our favorite movies from this decade. Obviously, now that brings us up to the 70s, and you guys were unbelievable on social media. Everybody played along with this one.
Wild.
Yeah, it was so much fun to see everybody's suggestions.
I'd argue some of the the most interaction we've gotten, the most response from a hashtag from a blend game.
And wait until we
Oh my God. Gabe has something to say.
I haven't looked, but some people were commenting that it was actually trending for them.
No.
It did so well.
What? Yeah, was it really?
Yeah. So I think Twitter does those like specifically, like they're kind of tailored towards your own taste. Yeah, but yeah. Hey.
That's
a milestone.
That's
for the
pretty amazing.
Hey, doesn't he have the voice of an angel?
He really does. God. I kind of wish he'd do that more often.
So. That's $600.
All right. So we're playing hashtag 70s blend. Impossible.
I know.
But Jake gets to go first. Sir, your pick. It has to be Star Wars.
It's not Star Wars.
It's what?
No, it's not.
What?
No, I saw you tweet that.
You didn't pick Star Wars.
How is that possible? Your favorite movies.
Tell us what it is.
It's Jaws.
Is it Jaws?
It's Jaws.
That's great.
Jaws is I think, a frame for frame, just absolutely perfect movie.
Masterpiece.
It's a movie that... set out to make us feel a certain way, and 40 years later makes me still feel that way.
Okay.
It is timeless.
Yeah.
It hasn't aged in any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
It will, I mean, you know, if aliens were to come down from Earth and they wanted to know what the human emotion of fear felt like, I would put Jaws in front of them.
Sure. Yeah.
I just think it just encapsulates everything. I mean, it invented an entire season of films.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Everything about it, I just think it's perfect.
Do you think it's Spielberg's best? Have we had this conversation? Yeah, I think we've had this conversation.
Yeah, I would say yes. It's not my favorite of his, but yeah, I would say it's so early in his career. But it's also tough because it's also great by accident.
Yeah, true.
So,
right.
You know, but I just think, you know, I can't help but love the characters. It's so perfectly written. It's perfectly shot. It's perfectly produced.
Right.
It's the shark, you know, the usage of the shark, the usage of not the shark. It's everything about it.
How on earth did you pick it over Star Wars, though? Tell me about wrestling with not picking Star Wars.
What are we doing? What's our next decade?
80s. don't tip your hand. Don't answer these questions that I ask you. Why would you do that? All right. Jaws is such a great pick. All right, I got to go next. And my pick might surprise you guys because it doesn't seem like an obvious pick, but when I tell you why it's everything that I love in storytelling, I went with Chinatown.
Oh!
Chinatown is...
You love the name Jake, don't you?
Perfection. It is a perfect screenplay. It is a flawless screenplay, but I've discussed this on the show a number of times. I love detective stories.
Yeah.
Freaking love detective stories.
Detective story.
It's the ultimate detective story. And not only that, I have this weird connection with California. Like I always believe I believe that I have a spiritual connection. I've discussed it with Michelle numerous times that I feel like in another life, I potentially lived in California.
Or in water.
I'm sure. Or near the water. How about near the water kind of thing? Because the first time I ever went to California too, the very first thing we did, Michelle came with me. We drove right to Santa Monica and I ran down the beach right into the ocean. Like clothes on and everything.
I was gonna say, nude.
Clothes on and everything. I went right into the water. And for some weird reason, I've always had this bizarre connection to California. I've always been obsessed with it. I think that's part of my thing with the film industry too. I always just sort of gravitated towards in the film industry. When I found Chinatown and it became this, again, great pulp noir detective story with an incredible character. Nicholson's Jake is unbelievably great. But then it was about the history of California. I learned about the Southern California Basin and the drought that they were trying to control and the water. And it just fascinated me. And it got deeper and deeper into its levels. I mean, it's one of those screenplays that they'd use to teach how to write a screenplay, essentially. All the performances in it are amazing. And so... while I was crazily torn between the Godfather films, obviously Jaws, Star Wars, Conversation even, just some incredible, incredible 70s films, I went with something that just is a favorite of mine for all those different reasons.
Great. Well, I would not have called it.
All those themes and topics. I could watch Chinatown every single day. I could just put it on
Good
and
call.
Just absorb it.
Good call.
But I think it's why I love Inherent Vice as much as I do.
Oh,
it has a
that
lot
makes
of
sense.
Those vibes.
That makes sense.
You guys both hate that movie.
I love Chinatown.
And you know what movie I've never seen is The Long Goodbye, Altman's movie, which is also very similar to that type of stuff, and I need to watch it. So, Kevin, you get to go
Vice
last.
Vice is my least favorite PTA film.
Interesting.
Is it yours, Jake?
Yeah, oh, God, by far.
What?
I didn't hate it. I just thought it was. I love Chinatown though.
Chinatown's amazing. But you picked
Godfather Part Two.
Oh, did you really?
Ooh.
Well, I think it's a perfect movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think everything about it is perfect. Performances. I just think that the film. I don't know. Just everything about it just is unbelievably perfect. I love that movie.
You like it better than the first one?
It destroys the first one.
What?
It's not even close. It's not even close.
Really?
It's like Terminator 2 versus Terminator 1 for me.
Really?
And I like Terminator 1 a lot, but I think Godfather Part 2 is...
Do you like the flashback stuff of it?
100%. I thought that the casting was brilliant. I love watching young Don Corleone.
Yeah.
I love just seeing him at home with a family. I don't know. There was something about that knowing who Don Corleone was based on what Brando did with him... And then dealing with him at a younger age, knowing what he had become
right.
in Godfather 1, but noticing him kind of coming up in the world of what he was getting himself into.
And paralleling it with the son.
That was insane to me. Like what a brilliant concept. I didn't read Mario Puzo's book, so I don't know if Godfather 2 was part of the storyline.
I don't know.
But I just thought the concept of having... Like you just said, the parallels were unbelievable. So that's my pick.
That's an amazing pick. You are not alone in picking Godfather 2. Scott Holch also said Godfather 2. Nicola Roby said Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Jake, why don't you read the next one?
Francis, says Star Wars.
Yes.
A New Hope.
And then
Karen Schumacher says... A little film called Jaws.
It is Jaws. Nice pick.
Well done, Karen.
So much, again, participation this week. You guys were incredible. I thought I was going to have a hard time with the 80s blend, and then one of our listeners was nice enough to point out what my pick is going to be already.
Ooh, tell me, what is it?
I'll tell you off air. How about that? For next week, you guys can play. Now, there's a reason why you're going to play along with next week, but I guess Kevin mentioned it, right? We're playing hashtag Roger Deakins blend. Now, for Deakins, I think what you have to pick is a shot. Not a film, a shot.
Ooh, I love the shot ones.
Yeah?
Oh.
That's fair.
Oh,
hashtag
that's good.
Roger Deakins blend, and you have to pick the shot. Not you can't just do the movie. You got to actually single something out.
I like it.
So you guys
can
play along on social media. Obviously, you can email us at realblend@cinemablend.com. Your picks. If you just send us the movie, we're throwing it out. It has to be a specific shot from a movie.
And we'll call you out for it, too.
Bonus points for screen grabs or full YouTube clips.
Ooh, yeah. You can cash all those points in for a famous non-prize.
It's not true. At our meetup, it will earn you something from Gabe, like a blender. That he brought a blender for Jake and Kevin and not one for me.
A real blender.
An actual blender, yes. But I didn't get
the
one.
The prize is that Gabe wraps you in mid-conversation. Like you'll be in the middle.
You trade your points.
Like, he's like telling you how much, someone's telling you how much they love the show.
Wait,
he's
like, wrapping us right now. If you're talking to someone and they go to do you just this. Like turn around and walk away?
Have you ever done that in person?
Have I ever like waved my finger at person or turned around and walked away?
Did you really?
Turned around and walked away.
Yes, I knew it.
How much of that
I
cost
I would actually
us?
Be honored to be wrapped by Gabe
you
in person.
You get wrapped up?
No, but like in mid-conversation.
5 times this episode.
No, but like if I walked up and I was like, Gabe, I love your show so much.
Yeah. Just moved it a little.
Oh, no, he'd let that stretch on.
All right. You guys can listen to us, obviously. Each week here, the show, I'm totally, completely lost because Jake moved my laptop.
You can listen to us every week.
Wait, let Kevin do something.
On Real Blend.
Kevin, get in here. Do the conclusion. Get us out of the show.
I started it.
Yeah.
Where is it?
Get us out of the show. Down the bottom there.
Bring in the caboose, Kevin.
Drop us a review on iTunes means a lot
to
us.
Do something better than that. Yeah, my God,
I don't know where we are.
We'll bluff your way through it.
Come on, man.
It was number 83. Oh,
where can listeners follow everyone? Jake's Takes. I'm sorry, I'm half asleep. Kevin McCarthy TV, Sean O'Connell, _ with a middle. drop us a review on iTunes. It means a lot to us.
This is harder than you think, isn't it?
More stars, the merrier.
Yes, the more stars, the merrier. The more reviews,
tune in,
the merrier.
Date
for our insert topic episode.
I have no idea,
Jake. That means we get to yell the final word. All right, everyone. We'll talk to you next week. And
done.